You pull up to the flight school on a perfect Saturday morning. Winds calm, sky clear, and you've been looking forward to this flight all week. You do your pre-flight, you climb in, you flip on the master switch to check the fuel gauges, and one of them isn't reading right. Or you notice the vertical speed indicator is pegged and hasn't moved, or the turn coordinator is sitting there motionless when it should be erecting. So now what? I am Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're digging into a regulation that I guarantee will save you from either a lot of unnecessary frustration or possibly an enforcement action, depending on which direction you tend to lean. That regulation is Federal Aviation Regulation 91.213, and it is the rule that tells you specifically and step-by-step what to do when you find inoperative equipment on an aircraft before a flight. Before we get into it, a quick word for AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every milestone in your aviation journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial. These are the moments that define your path as a pilot, and a coin is a way to hold on to them. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, back to that broken gauge on the ramp. Here's something I wish someone had explained to me clearly when I was training. There are two failure modes when a student finds broken equipment. The first is to just go anyway, figuring it probably doesn't matter. The second is to ground the airplane unnecessarily when the flight would have been perfectly legal. Both of those are problems. One is a safety and legal risk. The other costs you time, money, and confidence when you didn't need to. FAR 91.213 is the roadmap that tells you which situation you're actually in. The regulation exists because not all equipment on an airplane carries the same weight. Some of it is absolutely required for the flight to be legal. Some of it is useful but not mandatory for a given operation. And the rule gives you a structured way to figure out which category you're dealing with on the ramp before you ever start the engine. Let's start with the first question you have to ask. Does the airplane have a minimum equipment list? A minimum equipment list, which you'll hear called an MAL, is a document approved by the Federal Aviation Administration that specifies which instruments and items of equipment can be inoperative for a particular kind of operation. Airlines use them. Some charter and commercial operators use them. The MEL is tailored to that specific aircraft and approved by the FAA. If your airplane has an MAL, the MEL tells you what you can and cannot defer. You consult the MEL, full stop. It does the work for you. But most general aviation aircraft do not have MELs. Your Cessna 172, your Piper Cherokee, your Beechcraft Bonanza, almost certainly no MEL. Which means you go to the second part of the regulation and you work through a decision tree yourself. Let's walk through this together. There are four questions you ask, in order. If the answer to any one of them is yes, the airplane is not airworthy for that flight and you're done. If the answer to all four is no, you might be able to continue legally with some specific requirements. Question 1. Is the equipment required by the aircraft's type certificate data sheet, the aircraft flight manual, or the approved equipment list? Every certificated aircraft in this country has a type certificate. That type certificate and the documents that flow from it, including the pilot's operating handbook and the AFM equipment list, may specify certain equipment as required. This is aircraft specific. It varies from model to model and sometimes from serial number to serial number. The only way to know is to look at your airplane's documentation. This is one of the places where students often short-circuit the process. They know what 91.205 requires and they stop there, but the type certificate requirement is a separate question that comes first. An instrument can be required by the aircraft's approved documentation even if it's not on the regulatory required list. If it's on that required list for your airplane, you're done. The airplane is not airworthy. Question 2. Is the equipment required by FAR 91.205? This is the one most students know. FAR 91.205 is the required instruments and equipment regulation. It lays out exactly what you need for day VFR flight, night VFR flight, and instrument flight rules operations. For day VFR, 91.205 requires an airspeed indicator, an altimeter, a magnetic compass, a tachometer for each engine, oil pressure and temperature gauges, a fuel gauge indicating the quantity of fuel in each tank being used, a manifold pressure gauge for altitude engines, a landing gear position indicator if the gear is retractable, an approved anti-collision light system for aircraft certificated after August of 1971, safety belts, and an emergency locator transmitter for most operations. Students learn the acronym TMATO Flames to remember the day VFR list. Tachometer, oil pressure, manifold pressure gauge, altimeter temperature gauge for liquid-cooled engines, oil temperature for air-cooled engines, fuel gauge, landing gear position indicator, airspeed indicator, magnetic compass, emergency locator transmitter, safety belts. It is a useful memory tool, but knowing the acronym is the beginning of the analysis, not the end of it. Here's a real example that trips up pilots consistently. The fuel gauge. A student is doing a thorough pre-flight. They grab the fuel stick. They physically measure the fuel in both tanks. They know exactly how much fuel is on board. They climb in, turn on the master, and the left fuel gauge is reading strangely. It's clearly not accurate. And the student thinks, well, I just checked the tanks. I know the fuel is there. I'll go. The regulation at 91.205 specifically requires a fuel gauge indicating the quantity of fuel in each tank being used. If that gauge is not giving you a reliable indication, it is inoperative required equipment. The airplane is not airworthy for that flight. The visual check is excellent supplementary information, and you should always do it, but it does not satisfy the regulatory requirement for a functioning gauge, and it doesn't protect you from a fuel system issue that develops after you leave the ramp. That one catches people off guard. But the reason the requirement exists is not just about knowing your fuel quantity on the ground. A gauge that works in flight gives you an ongoing check, one that doesn't leave you without that information for the whole flight. Now, let's look at the vertical speed indicator as a contrast. It is not listed in 91.205 as a required instrument for day VFR flight. So from a 205 standpoint, it is not required for that operation. But you still have to answer question 1. Is it listed as required equipment in your aircraft's type certificate data sheet or flight manual? If it is, you still cannot defer it. If it isn't, you may be in the clear. This is exactly why knowing your airplane's documentation is not optional. The regulation sends you back to your specific aircraft every time. Question 3. Is the equipment required by an airworthiness directive? Airworthiness directives are mandatory compliance documents issued by the FAA when there is a safety issue with a particular aircraft type, component, or system. Some ADs require specific equipment to be installed and operational as a condition of continued airworthiness. If an AD covers the broken item and requires it to be working, that airplane is not airworthy. The AD makes it required. You do not go. Question 4. Is the equipment required by any other operating rule? This is the catch-all that picks up things the other 3 questions might not have covered. Emergency locator transmitters are a good example here. Under FAR 91.207, ELTs are required equipment for most operations. There are specific exceptions, including when the ELT has been temporarily removed for inspection or repair by an authorized technician. But if your ELT battery is dead and the unit isn't functioning, you need to look at 91.207 before you decide anything. So you have worked through all 4 questions. Type certificate. 91.205, airworthiness directives, other applicable rules. And the answer to all 4 is no. The broken item is not required for your intended operation.
Now what?
Under FAR 91.213, you may be able to continue legally, but there are specific steps that the regulation requires before you do. Step 1. The equipment has to be either removed from the aircraft or deactivated. You cannot leave a broken instrument sitting there actively giving you bad or misleading information. If it can be deactivated, you pull the circuit breaker and collar it. If the deactivation itself involves maintenance work, a certificated mechanic handles that. If the item needs to be physically removed, a mechanic handles that too. Step 2. You placard it. There must be a label in the cockpit, right at or near that instrument that reads inoperative. This is not a suggestion. It is a specific regulatory requirement. The placard exists so that every pilot who flies that airplane knows that instrument is not functioning. No surprises in the cockpit. Step 3. And this one lives between the lines of the regulation, but it is absolutely essential. You, the pilot in command, must determine that the inoperative equipment does not constitute a hazard for the intended flight. The regulation puts this judgment call squarely on you. And I want to sit with that for a moment, because this is where students sometimes check the legal box and forget to think. Legal and safe are not always the same thing. The regulation may permit a flight. Your judgment determines whether you should take it. Here is an example. You are a student pilot, close to your first solo, and you discover that the attitude indicator in your trainer is inoperative. For day VFR, the attitude indicator is not a 91.205 requirement. Maybe it is not on the aircraft's required equipment list either. Technically, you might be looking at a situation where the legal pathway to flight is open, but should you fly without it? Your instructor is going to think hard about that. Are you solid on outside references? Is the weather genuinely clear with no chance of inadvertently losing visual reference? What is the route? Those questions matter. The regulation opens the door, judgment decides whether you walk through it. Now let's talk about the check ride, because your examiner is going to probe exactly this topic. On a practical exam, an examiner might give you a scenario: you show up for a cross country and you notice during pre-flight that the turn coordinator is not working. What do you do? The answer the examiner wants is not just citing the regulation number. The answer is demonstrating the process. You walk through the questions. Is there a minimum equipment list? What kind of operation am I conducting? Is this equipment listed in the aircraft's type certificate documentation? Is it on the 91.205 required list for the operation I'm planning? Is there an airworthiness directive covering it? Is it required by any other rule? If the answer to each is no, you describe the steps. Deactivate it, placard it, determine it doesn't introduce a hazard. Make your go or no-go call. The examiner is looking for the framework. They want to see that you have a structured way to think through equipment issues, not that you memorized an answer for one specific case. Students who know the Tomato Flames acronym COLD but have never read the actual text of 91.213 tend to get tripped up here. They can recite the required list, but when the examiner asks what happens when something is broken, they don't have a clear process. The regulation gives you that process. Know it. Let me give you one more practical example before we wrap up. Navigation lights, the red and green position lights on the wingtips for night VFR flight, approved position lights, are required by 91.205. Absolutely required. You cannot legally operate an aircraft at night without them. But for day VFR, night position lights are not on the day VFR required equipment list, under 91.205. So if you discover a burned-out nav light before a day VFR flight, and it is not listed as required in your aircraft's type certificate documentation, you could potentially placard it, note it as inoperative, and fly during daylight. The judgment call, though, is this. If there is any chance that flight extends into civil twilight or after, you need to fix it first. The moment the sun drops below civil twilight, that inoperative nav light makes you non-compliant for night flight. Think about the full scope of the intended operation before you make the call. One more thing worth saying clearly. When you find inoperative equipment that requires maintenance before the airplane can legally fly, that work goes to a certificated mechanic. Pilots can perform preventive maintenance on aircraft they own or operate under the circumstances described in FAR 43.3, but that scope is limited. The determination of airworthiness and the logbook entry certifying a return to service belong to the mechanic. Know where that line is. FAR 91.213 is one of those regulations that sounds dry until you're standing on a ramp somewhere trying to decide whether to fly, with a student waiting, or your family buckled in, or a weather window closing. Having that framework clear in your head makes the decision rational instead of rushed. Today's segment pulls from the Federal Aviation Regulations, specifically 91.213 and 91.205, and the Airman Certification Standards for Private and Instrument Pilots. More at radiohanger.com. I am Pattern. Fly safe.